Thank you, Assemblymember Kowalki. So I've already approved the agenda as presented. So, Mr. Monarch, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? We've reached audience participation. This is the opportunity to speak to the Assembly about anything that you would like to, and there was a sign-up sheet in the back. And so you have 3 minutes, and up first is, ready? Mr. Haberman. Could you please turn the mic on, Mr. Haberman? Thank you. The sooner you start, the more time you get.
My name is Eugene Carl Haberman. I represent myself. I live in the Matteson Valley. I follow the public process. The public process done appropriately. The decision made by the governing body is more like in the public interest. I won't have much to say. I'll leave most of it for more witnesses at the next meeting, but I do raise a continued concern that when you have audience participation is coming before these reports that are going to be discussing 6A, E, 9/11 dispatch migration, and B, emergency radio systems upgrade. In all fairness, you expect to hear from the public with regard to these issues, but the public would like to hear what's said on those issues before they speak as a member of the public. With all due respect, this is out of order. I'm not out of order. This agenda is out of order in connecting with the public. Thank you very much, and that leaves me 2 minutes, 5 seconds credit.
Thank you, Mr. Haberman. Is there anybody else that would like to speak during audience participation? You're welcome to come forward, state your name for the record. Going once, going twice, sold. Then I will close audience participation. Next, that brings us to the items of business. We are at, and first up is the E911 dispatch migration. And I'll turn this over to Mr. Hayes.
Yes, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Well, I think we have a tag team there of IT with Eric Wyatt and Otto Feather over in DES, but both of those directors. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, Mr. Assistant Mayor, Assembly, Mr. Assistant Manager, or Deputy Manager, sorry, thank you. I'm Eric Wyatt, I'm the Director of the IT Department here. And today we've got a couple of briefings for you. The first up today, and if we could get it on the screen, maybe. Mark, can you drive that one? Okay. And do you all have a paper copy of today's briefing? Okay. Thank you. So the purpose of today's briefing is to do a stakeholders meeting for the E911 dispatch migration. As you are all well aware of, we are in the process of migrating our dispatch services for the borough, which is fire, EMS, rescue, and animal care, from the city of Palmer to the city of Wasilla. So today's opportunity is an opportunity for us to brief you on the status of that and hopefully get some public involvement on this, because all of you and all of our public are stakeholders, so we wanted to conduct a stakeholders meeting. So first I would like to start, there we are, thank you, on the second page here with some introductions. Again, the members of our team here that have been involved in this in writing the RFP and getting it awarded and getting things moving forward. I'd like to start with Mr. Mark Baker here. He's our telecommunications manager, so he manages this contract for the IT department and assists the emergency services. Director Otto Feather, interim director of the emergency services, actually holds the contract for the dispatch. Mr. Dan Monarch here is a project manager that we have hired to help us through this process. And let's see. I would also like to call out Nate Wallace from the City of Palmer, who's been a member of this transition group and been involved in all of our team meetings, and Chief Belden from the City of Wasilla, who's also one of our team members. the intent of this is, in fact, a meeting, a briefing. So anytime along the way, please stop me and ask questions, and either myself or one of our team members here will be glad to answer those questions. So as part of our agenda here, as you see, I want to give you a quick overview of the project. Want to relay the objectives at a high level. What are the objectives of this project? What is the organization of our group? The scope of this project? talk about the milestones, the budget, and the status, and then hopefully have an opportunity for some public comment if any of our public would like to ask questions about what's happening. This project has been in the news media multiple times in the past several months, so again, our objective here is to make sure that the public knows what's happening with their dispatch. Okay. First of all, our project overview. Successful, very simply, successful implementation of our 911 call taking and dispatch services contract with the city of Wasilla. Again, this has been with the city of Palmer for a number of years. It went out to RFP recently. It's been awarded. So this portion of the project, we are simply looking for a successful implementation of moving those services to the city of Wasilla. Dispatch services will be migrated to City of Wasilla's MATCOM Dispatch Center. Dispatch services for MSB will be consolidated at a single location. Again, let me reiterate, our need for dispatch is for fire, EMS, rescue, and animal care. And end-to-end PSAP systems to be implemented for resilience and redundancy. And let me explain that just briefly. So the PSAP portion of that is that's the E911 call taking. And one of the rules on the call taking is there must be a primary and a secondary dispatch center, or I'm sorry, call taking center, not necessarily dispatch. So dispatch and call taking are technically two separate things, even though we expect them to happen together. Okay. Next slide then. Our objectives, very simply, a seamless transition of emergency services dispatch from Palmer to MATCOM, and streamlining our resources within the borough. One of the things that's going to happen differently as part of this contract, as it happened in the past, is that Palmer executed the manpower for call taking and dispatch, and the IT department, we supported the systems. As part of the new contract, Wasilla will pick up the system support as well as the manpower for the call taking and dispatch. So when we talk about streamlining our resources, my IT department will no longer be taking care of the hardware and software that support this. Project objectives. Oops. And I think, there we are. Extend dispatch services contract with the city of Palmer to provide a transition period. So we want to make sure that there's plenty of transition time while this is taking place. This is something that we're passionate about. We cannot have hiccups, so we want to make sure that we're fully covered. So we've extended the contract with Palmer. We need to finalize the contract with between MSB and the city of Wasilla, which you'll see in the status has been done. Complete the seamless migration from one city to the other, and ensure the continuation operations of our records management system. The records management system, there is a system connected to our computer-aided dispatch system called Red Alert. And what that does is that keeps record of each incident. It also keeps records of our responders, their training, what calls they went on. And so this is a special kind of records management system that supports fire and EMS. And so we, because that is currently housed at Palmer, we need to ensure that that is brought into the borough facilities and is integrated with the Wasilla system. So that's one of our project objectives. Okay. So project organization. Mr. Moosey, as the borough manager, is our sponsor on your behalf, of course. Steering committee, I think I've introduced most of the people here, but also as part of our steering committee, got Mr. George Hayes, our director Cheyenne Handel of the finance department, and Steve Goggin, our assembly member. So these are the folks that are keeping high level tabs on the project and ensuring that if the borough needs resources, those resources are given to the project team members. Okay, we have a single point of contact, and that is Mr. Mark Baker, and his role in this is we delegate our authority to him to conduct this project and keep things moving along, and he is our direct interface with our project manager. And let's see, so telecommunication manager, and then stakeholders. And again, today's meeting is the reason for the stakeholders meeting. Our stakeholders are all of our members of the borough, the Animal Control Emergency Services, Alaska State Troopers, Wasilla, Palmer, all residents that may need to use 911 services or support it. And then we have team members, and again, our team members include members of our staffs here in the borough and members of the staffs at both of the cities. Okay. Okay, and a quick project scope. Again, completion of the contract services of the city of Wasilla. The contract will include all related service level agreements, and that talks about how quickly calls are answered, how quickly things are dispatched, and reports and information that is fed back to the borough for our for purposes after responders have responded to incidences. Development of a budget and schedule for FY18 for EU911 funds and for operating funds. Our dispatch has been paid jointly out of our 911 fund and our area-wide funds, so part of this project is ensuring proper funding for the transition period as well as the dispatch services going forward. Completion of written protocols, and so that means assisting the dispatchers in Wasilla on how to dispatch our services, and depending on location of incident, which units they need to be calling in, and what kind of verbiage to use, and what kind of calls to be made, and who to call first. Let's see, so again, our records management software integration with our CAD system is going to be within the scope of this project. The actual upgrade of that system is a separate project, but these two projects are related. And transferring of existing CAD equipment from the borough to Palmer. So our existing equipment that we own that is currently housed at Palmer, we are going to transition to Palmer for their use in the future should they need it. And then project management and proper fulfillment of the contract. Okay, so now, probably to the more important portion of it. Some of our milestones. we have achieved the contract extension with the city of Palmer. The contract would have normally run out on June 30th at the end of our fiscal year. We have extended that contract through December 31st of this calendar year with a clause in there that we can cancel with a 60-day notice. Either party can cancel with a 60-day notice. And the reason for that is kind of twofold. One is to provide some stability for the city of Palmer, and the other is to ensure lots of cushion and lots of time, if needed, for transition services. So if there's any hiccups in getting this transferred from Palmer to Wasilla, hopefully Palmer can continue to provide services for us during this transition period. So that contract has been put in place. The contract awarded to the city of Wasilla, that has been completed and signed. The assembly approval for the contract extension and for the city of Wasilla dispatch services, and you all would remember when we brought that forward and you passed that. So some of our milestones coming up here. Within a week or so, we would like to have a final decision on our new records management system, and it'll either be a new system or an upgrade to our existing one. And as part of that project, we're going to have to move that, again, out of the Palmer facilities into our facilities. April 1st is going to be an important date for this. This is what we're calling initial operating capability, and this begins the overlap period where Wasilla could perform the duties, but Palmer still has officially has the duties to perform, okay? And so what we have described that as is if for whatever reason something were to happen in Palmer and it simply could not take calls and continue to dispatch our services, that by that date, Wasilla would be able to pick up and do the job. It may not be perfect, but they could pick up and do the job. So it's really a kind of a contingency capability. But as part of that, then they also have some systems in place and people in place and protocols in place that they can do that. And they're well on their way to completing what they need to do to be able to reach what we're going to call full operating or final operating capability, and that is when the transition actually happens. So that's the next date on there, and that would be July 1st. So our contract and our target date is as of July 1st of this year, Wasilla will pick up all duties for call taking and dispatch, and the contract will be executed. Okay? So again, April 1st to July 1st is a transition period, April 1st being initial operating capability and July being final operating capability. Those are our targets, and again, we have contingency in place in case that there are problems. We can extend a transition period and ensure public safety. Okay. And then towards the end of July, we're looking to close out this project, if all goes well. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the project budget. So the transition period costs, you can see there, just over $1 million, and that includes some capital expenditures to upgrade systems. That includes some operating capital to pay personnel. The total contract for a 5-year term is, as you see there, $8.3 million with the city of Wasilla. As part of that $8.3 million, we have capital expenditures of $1.8 million and operating expenses of $1.3 million annually. So that totals $8.3 over a 5-year period. So that'll be the cost of this contract in its entirety. The potential cost overrun that we see on there, what we have budgeted for is in the event that we keep the contract with Palmer through the end of December of this calendar year, that would be the additional funds necessary to keep the current systems and to keep the current contract in place. So we're budgeting for that additional money so that if we do have problems, we can continue to ensure public safety. Now, that's not without risk, but we've tried to mitigate as many risks as we can. Below that is a little table that talks about some of the details of Wasilla's cost proposal. And what that does is that shows upgrading of 911 systems and CAD systems and training and certifications. And so, and then it breaks it down between CapEx, which is capital expenditures, and OpEx, which is operational expenditures. And so you see that the CapEx and the preparation of getting this up and online all happens in FY17, and then the majority of that is the operating expense for years 18 through 22. And finally, a project status. So just as a quick status here, our red alert to records management system is not placed before our dispatch services are migrated. This we would consider a risk to this project, and we've got various plans to try to mitigate those risks. If we can't get a new system or an upgraded system in place, we'll take some actions to integrate current systems. And MSB, unable to provide operating procedures to the city of Wasilla, is again one of the things that Wasilla is going to need to be successful, and so emergency services is working on that diligently right now to mitigate that risk and to provide operating procedures. A couple of issues: the distribution of funds to the city of Wasilla so that they have funds necessary to start upgrading systems, start getting people in place, hiring them, and to get things moving. And my understanding is the funds distribution will take place later this week. So we're going to have the initial outlay of cash from our area-wide budget, and our 911 budget is going to be sent to the city of Wasilla here later this week. And one of the issues or risks that we face is anytime you have a transition of this type, and it's very public and people know what's happening, the city of Palmer's employees in the current dispatch, of course, are looking at options. So there is a risk that the personnel, the staff there at the Palmer Dispatch could be degraded if people are leaving. And so we're all working together to try to make sure that if that happens, we can come up with some contingency plans to mitigate those risks as well. Again, we're primarily focused on public safety here. Yes, sir.
Is there the option for them to work at the new facility in Wasilla? Is that being...
My understanding is that Wasilla is posting positions, and yes, they can apply for those positions. We have had some discussions earlier with the city of Wasilla, and Mayor Cottle was very adamant about working together to work out to make sure that the manning would not be an issue. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of my formal presentation.
Great. We'll open up to the assembly. Dr. Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Assistant Associate Mayor. through you to Mr. White. Just a couple of quick questions. I'm not understanding the $506,000 potential project overrun with a $1.8 million capital. That's like a 25% overrun potential. And the second question is, so I understand next week you will have the software determined and in place so that you have enough time to implement that prior to go live?
Yeah, it's through the Assistant Deputy Mayor. Okay, to Assemblymember Doty. So the cost overrun, what we're doing is we're budgeting money in case we need to keep this transition period open for longer. Because we have signed a contract with Palmer that goes through the end of December, we're ensuring that we have proper funds to pay that contract in the event that we have to honor that contract. That's what that $506,000 represents. So again, if we don't meet our July 1st target date, then we would want to continue to extend with Palmer for whatever period is necessary. And so by signing the contract, we have budgeted for enough money to cover that contract should we need it. Obviously, we're working to try to meet that July 1st date, so we wouldn't need that much.
So if should we get to the point we're starting to dig into that overrun, that would be nice to hear back.
Yes.
That's happening.
Yes. And part two of the question was?
The question is, next week you'll be ready with a software decision and to be able to move forward, so you'd be on your timeline?
On the records management system. Yes, ma'am. We're, in fact, Mr. Baker here has been in contact with our current provider, with Red Alert, and we have determined that they do have offerings that should support everything that we need. We've got a good requirements list, and they can support that, so I think that decision is really just a formality in a later meeting we had this week.
Okay, we have Assemblymember Kowalki, then Assemblymember McKee, and in the hold is Assemblymember Sykes.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. Question, we're currently through our IT department supporting, from a technical standpoint, the current operation. Those resources, what do they amount to, and what's the plan for when the change takes place?
Yes, sir. So currently we estimated between a quarter and a third of an FTE goes to supporting our current infrastructure there at Palmer as part of the dispatch center. So it's not a full FTE. Essentially what happens is I get that time back from my people to support other ongoing IT events. And what that means then is I am not in a position to need to ask for additional resources to keep up our volume of IT work. So I'll get a little bit of time back. I've got three individuals within my shop that spend, that are generally called out on the events when we go to support the equipment in the Palmer dispatch. And so I just get their time back and I can use it for other IT related maintenance issues.
Assemblymember McKee.
I'm going to go back to the $506,000 overrun. Mm-hmm. Right now, the borough is $5 million in a hole, and the state's $3 billion in a hole. Where do you think that money's going to come from?
Well, sir, we're budgeting for it because we've signed a contract, and we are working diligently so that we don't use that $506,000. And if we don't use it, then it just goes back into its respective funds, area-wide, and the 911 fund.
Okay.
Hopefully we don't use it.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wyatt. And I haven't been out of town a little bit, but I want to thank you guys for your hard work and kind of pushing this forward. And to Mr. McKee's interest, you know, a bunch of this money is from surcharges from phone calls and stuff. And I'd like to hear, I guess, from the manager where we're at. We're trying to do some things at the state level to adjust what some of those surcharge monies can be used for to help pay for data that drives these systems. But as a whole, we're running dual operations during a transition period, what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. But overall, the costs may be the same, but we're providing, at the end of the day, a higher level of service that the public is expecting. And I think that's our ultimate goal, is to find the level of service. But the funds are mainly coming from 911 surcharges and stuff we already have budgeted. But I'm sure we'll do everything we can to hit our target dates and not burn up the additional contract money. But thank you very much for your efforts.
Thank you, Assemblymember Culligan. I have a odd question to Deputy Manager Hayes. How long will that second report, do you think, take about the emergency radio systems upgrade? Do you think that'll be? The reason I'm asking is because you had said earlier about allowing the public to ask any questions. So I don't know if we want to reopen audience participation to do that. Do you want to do that now, or do you want to do that at the end of that?
I'll anticipate the next briefing taking 45 minutes without questions.
Okay, then I'm going to keep moving along. Are there any questions from the Assembly? Okay, thank you very much.
If I may make one more comment on this issue, our intention is every other Assembly meeting during the manager's comments at the normal 6 o'clock meeting, we'll give you updates on this project. So we did have the question about getting the updates as we go along, so we're going to keep you well informed as to the progress of the dispatch contract.
Okay, Assembly members, anything else? Fellows? Okay. Then we're at the next item up for business, and that's Mr. Hayes, the emergency radio systems upgrade.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. That's Mark Baker, I think, is going to honcho that, or are you going to do that, Eric? It's okay.
I'm going to take that.
Carry it away.
Okay, so next up is our radio briefing. As you all recall, we had a briefing in these chambers about their radio system upgrades some time ago, and we talked about some of the options, the necessity for upgrading our radio systems and some of the options, and we promise you to get back to you with a full briefing on the research and the options, spelling out the problems and a little education. So what we are hoping to do today is to first provide a little education about our current system, provide a little bit of education about the options that are available for upgrading or replacing, and then make a recommendation and look at some of the costs. So that's what we're after today, and the results of the day today from you as again, first of all, education, and then we're kind of looking for a non-binding commitment to say that we're ready to move forward. And as we look at the options and the recommendations, we'll talk a little bit about what moving forward looks like. And so we'll be asking you to at least support the effort to move forward in concept. And again, then we can launch a project and start working out the details. Okay, what we're seeing on the screen here today, it's called a story map, and we have briefing slides embedded with additional content. You see the video of the content here. And so we will be looking at the screen, at the briefing. You should also have with you a complete packet here of the briefing today. These are all of the details that are in the briefing. I'm going to call out specific pieces within each section to talk about that I think are of major interest to you. There are also copies of this briefing in the back for anyone in the public that wants to take one with them. This presentation and the briefing is also available online, and there's a URL at the end of the briefing that the public can use to get access to this briefing. Okay, so the That's the agenda. Next slide, the introduction. Okay, thank you. And so the introduction, again, the project group in this case is IT, myself, and Mr. Baker, and Emergency Services. We've got Interim Director Otto Feather. We've got the Emergency Manager, Casey Cook. I think I saw him earlier. He's over here somewhere. Okay. We've got Ken Barkley from Fire has been involved in this. Obviously, large stakeholders in the usage of radios. We've got emergency management. And to some degree, we've got, Director Dolan also uses the radios, and he's also part of this. So we've got a large group here that are interested in using this. So to begin, we have talked in the past about our emergency radio systems, or our radio systems in general in the borough have been antiquated, and we need to look at options for upgrading them. And so the first thing we focus on in this introduction is our operational requirements. And as we see on the slides there, our operational requirements are really 24/7 reliability, wherever people are, secure, clear, and uninterrupted communications, and a system able to track and record the incidents. And to really drive this point home, I'm going to ask Director Feather to come up and talk about operational needs in emergency services.
Deputy Mayor Beck, Assembly Members, Mr. Hayes, thank you very much for having this opportunity to explain our challenges here with the communication system. I wasn't ready for prime time. I didn't know I was going to do this, but I will tell you that I'm passionate about making sure that we can communicate. When we've got firefighters inside of buildings, we've got medics on the road, it can be a very daunting thing to have to try to establish contact and then get the resources we need to be successful. I could talk all night about anecdotes with my staff and others about how that has tripped us up in many ways. And we feel that these legacy systems are becoming unsupportable. And we're very thankful for the work that we've had out of IT to be able to help put this together and come up with a program that can help create success with your help and your direction. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. We're going to have some additional conversation with emergency services along the way. When we get to a few examples, we're going to see how that affects people. So let's go to the next slide, please. And first, we want to talk about our current system. It uses a conventional system using one channel. So these are our one channel radio systems. In other words, when you are on one frequency, that's what you get is the one frequency, and you can only use that frequency in that area. And so what we're looking at on the slides on these maps here is you can see that we have a number of towers scattered throughout the borough, and on these towers are repeaters. Each repeater works with one frequency or one set of frequencies. There's actually two, ascend and receive. And in order to use that frequency, you have to be roughly within that circle. Those circles aren't perfect, but they're just about. And so what that means is if you're traveling throughout the borough, transitioning from one area to another, our responders will have to physically reach down and change channels on their radios while they're driving down the road. And so each tower represents a different frequency, and depending on your location, you would have to use a different frequency. This presents problems for our responders, obviously, but this also represents problems for our dispatchers. Those dispatchers have to be monitoring all those frequencies, know where their resources are on which channels, and be switching to those channels as well. They have to use all of those channels in the course of their duties. Some of the difficulties that we face, as you see on that map, there's a darker green area and then kind of a lighter green or aqua area. In the dark green areas, we have good signal strength. That means, like when you're listening to the radio, if you're listening to the country station 107.5 and at your home, it's nice and clear and you can hear the music, it's real good. And as you descend into Palmer, you drive down in here, you start to lose that signal. It starts to snap and crackle and pop and it gets staticky and you can't hear it as well. The aqua areas here on the map represent that with our radio systems. So these are the areas where you start to get some signal loss and you don't have reliable communications. So if you're on an emergency call and you're in the green area and you're talking to dispatch and you're getting the proper information, as you start to move into these aqua areas, you can start to lose signal strength. You start to get static instead of hearing what you want to hear. And as a couple of examples, here as you're looking at the map there, you can see that's Wolf Lake and the housing around Wolf Lake. So you can see really well within the heart of our population, we've got areas that have signal loss. And so that means if someone is responding to your area, our responders are starting to lose the vital communication they need to find the home of the person that they need to find. We've got another example. You have that one queued up as well. This is in the Moose Range, and this is vitally important because that's where I live. And so I'm in an area where we have degraded communications. Now, our former director, Bill Gamble, said that that's really not a problem. He's not coming to my house anyway. But I reminded him I have a wife and daughters. He says, okay, well, maybe we need to upgrade our radios. So these are important, and I try to use an anecdote there, but this is vitally important because we do have people out there that need these services, and we want to make sure that we can communicate clearly so that we can get to them when we need to. Okay, let's go to the next slide, please. Next, we want to talk about our burrow growth, and you have seen this video before. What this video is doing is it's showing you the building growth from 1910 to present in five-year increments. So as you watch the dots appear on this map, each 5 years, that's how many additional buildings have been added to our borough. Along with these additional buildings, of course, we're adding people. When we look at our communication systems, our radio systems, these were designed 30 years ago. And so the design and implementation of this was done 30 years ago when the population was much, much smaller. And as you can see by some of the graphs in the handout that you have there, our population growth, not in the last 30 years, but just in the last 15 years, from 60,000 to over 100,000. So as we get more and more buildings, as we get more and more people, the need for our radio system grows, but our radio system has not grown with it. Now, when I say it was implemented 30 years ago, obviously equipment has been replaced since then. We have newer equipment, but it's of the same style and in the same configuration. And so we continue to have the same kinds of problems. Also notice at the bottom of page two there, the EMS responses, you can see that in 2007, just 6,300 responses. And in 2014, we were pushing 10,000 responses. So we have more and more responders on the road every day, and yet our communication system is not keeping pace. Okay, next slide. Single channel issues is one of the issues that we face right now. So when we have these single channel radio systems, that means everybody's speaking on the same channel. Well, that's kind of like if we're all standing in this room and we're all carrying on different conversations, which happens during the breaks. You can hear everything that Mark and I are talking about, and we can hear everything that you're talking about, and there's an awful lot of static, an awful lot of noise, and an awful lot of interruption. That's what happens on these radio systems. It's like having a room full of people all talking at once. This is exactly what it's like. And then when paging occurs, paging is sending out a signal to alert responders that we have a new incident happening. And so right in the middle of a conversation, you get this tone called paging that interrupts everybody, and they have to stop and then listen for the next incident. So conversations are being interrupted constantly. And we've got Casey Cook said that he might have some examples of that as we were and where is he sitting? Oh, there he is. As we were talking right before this meeting, I said, that probably hasn't happened in the last 10 minutes. And he says, actually, it has happened in the last 10 minutes. So this happens constantly. Any times per day? Or?
So today we had four simultaneous. So also, in what the slide doesn't show is that Fred had a dispatcher up there.
I think you should come up and use the mic so we can hear you. Thanks.
Do I need to introduce myself too? Casey Cook, emergency manager. So as Mr. Wyatt was saying, it's like the telephone game, but what this slide doesn't show is that dispatcher there is also dealing with the city of Houston, the city of Palmer, And if there's a wildfire going on, then they're also dealing with Division of Forestry Dispatch. And so it's a line, but it's a teed line at that dispatcher position. So any of those phone games that are being played are compounded in that dispatch.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you. Just a comment. The physician paging systems that the hospitals have used in the past for contact physicians has been declared obsolete, no longer is available in the Valley.
Assemblymember Kowalki.
Yes, I'm not sure who might answer this question, but anecdotally, I'm hearing that in my district, Willow Caswell, so on, that people have, put the radio down on the seat and defaulted to cell phones in order to communicate. Is that substantially true?
Yes, substantially true.
And Assemblymember Sykes.
And in my district as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey. And as Casey was talking about the telephone game, as I pointed out, the different towers are different frequencies, and so you have dispatchers sometimes have to relay information from one frequency to the next, and that's where these games can be problematic. So they have to relay from one frequency to another, and they're handling multiple incidents at one time. So you can see how the problem just compounds and compounds. Okay, next slide, please. So the next thing that we want to talk about is the zone-to-zone problem. So this is an illustration of what I introduced earlier. So this is just two of the five different towers and five different frequencies that we're using in the Valley. And what this illustration is showing that as vehicles are moving down the road, when they move out of range of one tower and into the range of another tower, they have to reach down and change their channels. Now, you'll notice where the circles overlap, the dark circle and red circle there. They can make that transition anywhere. They can change those channels anywhere. They have to decide where to do that. And if you get a good, clean look at this picture, you'll also see that the road travels along some of these aqua areas. So you have some crackly, staticky radio while they're in those areas. And so they have to make that transition. They have to let dispatch know that they've made that transition. And they're taking their eyes off the road. So this all becomes very, very problematic while they're doing that. And as Mr. Cook was saying earlier, in some cases with rescue, they could be transitioning through all five areas. So they'll have to change channels each time. I believe many of you have also been on some of these rides, that you've been with emergency responders and you've seen this firsthand. So this becomes a very large problem. So our goal with this is we want to, operationally, we want our responders to stay on the same frequency throughout the event. And we do so through things called talk groups, not necessarily on the same frequency, but through something called a talk group. So what they don't have to do is they don't have to reach down and change channels. So that's what we're after. Next slide, please. Distorted and garbled communications. Okay. What we have in your handout on page 4 here is a little bit of what our members are facing. So first I'd like to look at a couple of things here. We've done some research and we've done some communicating with other people in other areas that are having the same problems. And you see ALMR, October 15, 2016 issue, there was an article in that report, why FirstNet should only be for data use. And it talks about one of the issues with our radios is in-building communications. It's become an increasingly important issue. So you see that stated in there. One of the other problems this antiquated radio system has is it does not penetrate steel and concrete buildings very well. In fact, in some cases, not at all. And so one of the issues that we run into is when we have responders in their vehicles out in a parking lot, we have responders inside a building, burning building, or a building where there's a medical emergency, they don't necessarily have good communications between the two. And right now, you have to find workarounds with cell phones or whatever you got to do. But our old system, the system we're currently using, won't penetrate those buildings. So that's one of the things where you will have garbled communication. Was you're trying to talk into the building, you might have very limited communications. The 911 commissioner's report from September 11th there in New York City talked about the poorly performing radio systems during these emergencies. And again, the radio communication is not penetrating the steel and concrete buildings, which hindered communications and probably cost more lives than it needed to. One of the problems that we have with garbled communication is that on our current system, there is no security, which means anybody can go out and buy a VHF radio, find the proper frequency, and simply key the mic and interrupt communications. So we have members of the public could potentially be speaking on the same frequencies and interrupting communication between our dispatch and our responders. And this is definitely a problem. We're going to talk more about it as we go along. We also have issues with interoperability with other agencies. So with our current system, we do not have interoperability with Alaska State Troopers or Department of Forestry or some of the other agencies that we need to communicate with. This is why ALMR has been our backup system. So as of today, ALMR, Alaska Land Mobile Radio, is our backup, and that bridges that communications gap. Finally, one of the last garbled communication problems that we have is recording of incidents. So once we've had an incident, we've had responders go out on that, we may get a request later for a recording of the incident for whatever legal purposes. And so these things are recorded, but when they're garbled, you can't tell what's being said. We've got an example of it today, if you would mark this. So there's an example of different communications talking on top of one another, and I'm told these examples get much, much worse, and I think many of you have heard those. And as to really kind of drive this point home, Emergency Services has brought along with them pagers today that if you would like, you may take with you and have for a couple of weeks or longer for listening, and you can listen to this on a daily basis if you'd like. So you can be tuned into your areas, and you can listen to the type of traffic like this that our responders have to deal with on a daily basis. So again, at the end of the meeting, if you would like to take one of those with you, we've got some here in the back. Okay. At the bottom of page 4, again, I'm talking about the 911 emergency on September 11th. Part of this garbled communication issue happened when aircraft were looking at the buildings and realizing that they were probably getting ready to collapse, they called out and said everyone should evacuate. This was 21 minutes before the buildings actually came down. Most of your firefighters and law enforcement and whatnot, especially those inside the building, didn't hear those communications. So again, lives could have been saved had communications been better. And so these are the same kinds of things that we are facing with an antiquated system. Next slide, please. So what have we done? That's the current condition, that's the current problems, and so next I want to look at what we've done to prepare this briefing, to do some research to find out what is the best solution going forward. So we've done quite a bit of research here. We've looked at a variety of technologies. There's been a lot of conversation about different technologies that might solve the issues. We've looked at some case studies. We've talked to other boroughs, other counties in the U.S. to find out what they're using, find out lessons learned, some pros and cons of the directions that they've gone. We've looked at grants, and we've looked at funding considerations. How do we pay for these things? These things aren't cheap, so we've done some research for that, and we've also researched the cost of the various technologies, and we're going to get to each of those coming up here pretty quick. So we've done some field testing. You can see under perform there. We've again done research. We've done a number of interviews. We've had a shorter briefing here, and then today we're doing the longer briefing, hoping to educate on the problems and the possible solutions. We've also rated those options then and come up with our best recommendation. So things that we have researched, we considered various options, doing nothing, status quo, adding to our existing network, building it out, simply adding capacity with the same technology. We've looked at satellite options. We've looked at long-term evolution or LTE or FirstNet, which there's been a lot of news about, and we'll give some explanations about that. And then we've looked at other land mobile radio solutions. So we've heard of ALMR, that's Alaska Land Mobile Radio. Well, land mobile radio is simply a technique, and so we looked at options within that technique, and we'll explore those. And I'd like also like to point out the quote right underneath the research solutions. There again is our main focus, redundancy and interoperability. So through this, we want to stay focused on our operational need. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so I'm going to get into each of these options. Again, if there's any questions, please holler out. Stop me as I go along. First option we looked at is do nothing. Let's just go status quo. It's worked for the last 30 years. Let's see how it's going. Well, we all know that we have an increasing population. We've just seen all of the additional buildings. We know about the additional people. We've heard the radio communications. This is a common problem. We've heard a testimonial from emergency services here that we have four incidents going on at once. So with the increased population and structures, we have increased activity with our responders. As just one small bit of information on that, we've got 51 schools in the borough, five new ones built in the past 5 years. And so we all know about our rate of growth. The pros of doing nothing, of course, are no additional capital expenditures, no additional money there, and just a continuation of the current operational costs. So the costs don't rise if we do nothing. The cons, we have continued communication issues. All the things we've been talking about simply continue. Interoperability issues, we still have those same problems. We're gonna have more examples later as we talk about this of interoperability problems during sockeye fires and some of the other incidents that we've had. Increased risk of emergency failures, we can't communicate, we're not gonna be able to respond to our personnel. Risk to our emergency personnel, where we try to pass information to our responders, not able to. And of course, the bottom line there is the additional risk for public safety. So we've got some additional information there. So what if we do nothing? Again, going back to the 911 Commission report, they talk about the responders during 9/11 having point-to-point communications with six operating channels. So that means that point-to-point, not using a repeater, people using mobile radios in vehicles or handsets, and just talking to one another directly. These have limited range, and they found that they had many companies, commercial companies, using the same frequencies, which compounded the problem of people walking on one another or talking over one another. So these are things that they found in the report that they could have done better if they'd had a better radio communication system. The sheer number of users clogged all the radio frequencies, and again, communications was difficult. So capitalizing on lessons learned from that incident, as you see at the bottom of page 6 and on to page 7, the Boston Marathon bombings benefited from having learned the lesson from New York, upgraded their radio communication systems before that incident happened. And they found that they had much more reliable voice contact when responding to that emergency. So again, that's one of our objectives, is to learn from others and try to take those lessons learned and increase our capability. Next slide. Thank you. The next option that we looked at was simply increasing or adding to our current communication systems. So it is possible we can simply put up more towers and add more radios to the area. But what that does is just really make a bigger mess for us. Then we have potentially more frequencies, which the frequencies are not readily available, But if we could get more frequencies, that just puts more burden on our dispatchers. They have to be monitoring more frequencies. Our responders have to be monitoring more frequencies. These towers can't have the same frequency in these overlapping circles, or they walk on top of each other. So what this illustration is showing is we could potentially add more towers, and you see the blue circles there are three that we could add, but you see kind of where they are so that they're not interfering with the other radio towers. It doesn't really gain us much, and all it does is compound our situation. So looking down through the pros and cons of this, we have a lower cost when we do this. However, we have a number of cons there. In particular, we continue to have the security problem. Anybody with a VHF radio can tie up radio communications. We actually tested this during the last Alaska Shield. So thinking, what are our cyber vulnerabilities with our communication systems? What is something that a terrorist attack could do to us to really disrupt our operations? They can get a VHF radio and key the mic and just really lay low the communications for everybody. And now our responders can't communicate. So we actually explored that scenario during that exercise. One of the other cons is we looked at funding, and there are grants available to upgrade our radio systems. All of them spell out using a land mobile radio type of system. They won't give grants for our legacy kind of system. So we can't get any help financially if we continue down this path. Okay, next slide, please. So the next thing we looked at is satellite communications. We looked at a number of different providers for satellite communications. As you see there, Intelsat, DomSat, SARSAT. And as we looked down through some of the options, first a little bit of education about satellite communications when it comes to this. The Iridium type satellite constellation is what's called a low Earth orbit satellite communications. This has very little latency because they're low Earth orbit, they're closer to us. But in order to get full coverage, it takes an enormous number of satellites in space in order to have direct line of sight to a satellite at any given time. And they're all moving low, they're all moving very quickly, and so there has to be a lot of them. Because there's a lot of them, it's a very expensive satellite constellation to have. And of course, that expense is passed on to its users. So using this type of a satellite constellation is very expensive to the end users like us. Again, very little latency in communications because there is a distance involved. You speak, it takes a moment to get to the person who's receiving, but that's not too bad with the satellites being close. The ICO, or Global Communication, offers a medium orbit system. So these satellites are a little further out in space. You don't need quite as many to get full Earth coverage, but it is more expensive to launch them because you got to push them further out into space. So they're still very expensive. Your latency issues become a little greater as well. So between the time you speak and the person on the other end hears, gets a little bit longer each time. And then finally, the Inmarsat offers what are referred to as geostationary or geosynchronous satellites. These are way out in space. And you can get greater coverage of the Earth with far fewer satellites. However, they're quite a long ways out, which means they're very, very expensive to put out there. And you get high latency. So when you speak, there's actually a very noticeable delay between when you speak and the next person hears. There's also an additional difficulty with these this type of satellite. Is when we say geostationary or geosynchronous, these are orbiting over the equator. From where we are, that's way down on our southern border. So that's kind of like your satellite dish at home. Most of your TV is coming from this type of satellite. So if you've been home watching the game on your satellite TV and right before your team's about to score and all of a sudden the whole screen gets pixelized and you lose signal, and because it's snowing outside or atmospheric conditions or whatever's going on, and you lose the whole picture and you get frustrated. Well, that's what happens with our communications too. So atmospheric conditions and other interruptions can interrupt those kinds of things. And again, those satellites are way down on our horizon. And so in some cases in Alaska, you're looking between mountains if you're in the wrong spot to have to look for that. So whereas these solutions can be good for a number of applications, they're not necessarily good for us. During our research, we found no agencies that we spoke to use satellite communications as their primary communication. They do use it as backup, but not as a primary. So very expensive and have a number of problems. Okay. One other point to make on the cons on that slide is both Iridium and ICO have filed for bankruptcy. So tells you something about how expensive it is. Okay. Let's go to page 10. We're still on the satellites here. On page 10, we look a little bit at the costs and fees, and I'll just point this out real briefly, that when we looked at the Iridium in particular and we started to look at what that would cost, and you see the handset and the talk group fees and the phone services, and you can see some of the costs on that. So again, for the end user, it's a pretty high cost per unit when we're using satellite phones. So again, it provides a good backup communication, but it's not one that you'll necessarily want to distribute to all of your responders. I'd also like to point out just there's some misunderstanding of how all of this stuff works. I spoke to a gentleman here a while back that actually worked on ALMR when he was in uniform, and he had mentioned, well, we could just hang one satellite up there and that would cover the whole state and we'd be good to go. Well, that's not how satellites work. So that's not how orbits work. We can't hang one directly over the state. So we have to have satellite constellations. We have to have many, many satellites. Or if you have one hanging, it's down on the equator. So we have to dispel some of the misinformation about satellites. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Wyatt. A couple other things about satellites. Isn't it true that some of the terrain problems we have, especially up the Glen Highway, preclude even satellite service from being reliable? And the other thing is, during equinoxes, aren't there predictable sun outages also?
Yes, sir. Both of those things are true. You can be down inside valleys and not be able to see satellites. And that's the same with your GPS. GPS is a low Earth orbit kind of a satellite. And occasionally, you'll not get three satellites to do your GPS on. It's the same thing with the communication satellites. And so you can be down in valleys between mountains and lose your communications. And part two of the question was?
Sun outages.
Sun outages, absolutely. Atmospheric conditions do disrupt satellite communications. Sunspots, sun outages do disrupt satellite communications. So yes, you can have all of those problems.
Okay. Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So are we coming to a point where the emergency services is requesting or recommending a particular method of communication over the others, and you know, just so we can get a benchmark so we can kind of compare some of these costs?
Yes, sir. We've got two more types of technologies to talk about, and then we'll make our recommendation. Saving the best for last. Absolutely. Okay, let's go to the next. We'll stop orbiting this issue and go on to the next. Okay. So the next we want to talk about is long-term evolution, or LTE, or FirstNet. And I think all of us have seen the commercials or the push-to-talk cell phones. And this is kind of what that is all about. So the you can see quite a write up there on page 10 about the LTE, or the push-to-talk. Public Safety Communications Research Program is building out a 700 megahertz public safety system on a trial network. So we've heard this discussed, but the reality as of today is these are in the trial phase. So they're building out a trial network, and they're deploying and testing their systems. Now, as we look down through that paragraph, we talk about the LTE as new, all IP, high bandwidth, wireless technology enables delivery of new and advanced services in a guaranteed, secure, and reliable way. Yes, it does. This technology promises a great many things for us, and it would be a great step forward in our communications. However, it's not quite ready, as we'll see. I'm going to turn the page here. So as it matures, it's going to be a fantastic communication option. Over on page 11 there, a little bit about how it works. So, in the middle of that paragraph there, simplified flat network, all IP-based, reduces latency. We've talked about latency. Increases spectrum efficiency, meaning all of our different frequencies, we can make very good use of our frequencies, and reduces interference, and so interference is mitigated. So yes, again, this promises to be a wonderful technology. We're not quite there yet. Being all IP-based, that means, yes, this is your smartphone, this is your computer, this is your iPad. This is all the same technology as we're using in so many other areas. So we can deliver data, we can deliver voice, we can deliver video. However, again, the voice portion of it is not quite there. Jumping down under FirstNet, you'll see in the small paragraph there, the coverage challenge is to provide 60,000 public safety agencies, 3,100 counties, 566 federally organized tribes and coverage areas. The project operation, projected operation, is the year 2022. So you see that it's not quite ready. It's promising great things in the future, but it's not quite there yet. As we jump down to where is Alaska in this process, John Rockwell, our current single point of contact for FirstNet, says only data will be available in our area towards the end of 2018. Okay. So, and then years until the push-to-talk option is ready. So kind of what this means, and some of the way that this technology works, is it does work through our cell towers. It's the same type of technology. Okay. So it does work in many areas, but there's not nearly enough bandwidth in that area right now to be able to cover everything that we need in our area. It is being used more successfully in some very urban areas because they have a lot more cell towers, they have a lot better coverage. But in rural areas like this, we simply don't have the infrastructure necessary to make this a viable option. So as we look down, you see the pros. We're going to have real-time video, email, recorded communications, everything we want. On the next page here, fast access to information anywhere. This is just like your smartphone. The cons, however, major earthquake, you could lose all or most of your phones very, very quickly. You could lose your internet service. And a lot of this infrastructure goes down pretty quickly. Interoperability may be an issue, but because it is IP-based, it can be made to be interoperable with land mobile radio type of systems. Right now, the device-to-device can't happen. So that's just like your smartphone now. You don't speak directly from one smartphone to another. You have to go through a cell tower, and that's the same with this kind of a system. Current LMR-type radios, you can speak directly device-to-device if you're close enough. You don't have to use a repeater. Okay? So the last con there, this technology is still in the infancy stages of development. So it's going to be great when it gets here, but it's not quite ready. Some of the, again, the quotes that we see there, ALMR's October 15th issue, many questions and concerns by end users about LTE must be addressed before we can accept it. And again, kind of jumping down towards the bottom of the page, we have John Rockwell, again, our single point of contact for FirstNet here in Alaska, is at this time, our 2015 Alaska FirstNet meeting here, the recommendation is to continue to maintain the ALMR type systems. So that's what our experts are telling us. In the very last paragraph there, it also talks a little bit about land mobile radio handsets use 3 to 5 watts of power, whereas the LTE type systems, cell phones, use 1 watt of power. That has a lot to do with the distance on how far that signal can travel. So again, our handheld radios, our LMR-type radios, give our responders greater distance that they can communicate from without having as much infrastructure, meaning towers or repeaters. Okay. Turning to
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Mr. Wyatt, my question is addressed at the top of the page of 13, but when you're going 700 megahertz, your towers have to get closer together. And, you know, that's really a problem where we already are.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, another question.
Assemblymember McKee.
Thank you. I thought you were going to overlook me. Look, you left three words off right in the middle. You had solutions. You didn't have within financial constraints. Okay? Now, let me say one more thing. The previous EMS manager, when asked in September, when he brought this whole thing up, was asked what it was going to cost. You can go back and look in the records. He said somewhere around $10 million. That is about, we've got $1.98 for this, okay? We don't have $10 million.
Yes, sir, and we are going to address the costs, and we're going to explore funding options, okay? Not to say that they're all going to materialize, but we will definitely look at some options for funding this. So moving on from LTE then to land mobile radio. The next slide is towards the middle of page 13. So again, land mobile radio is currently what ALMR is, and there's a couple of different types of this, and we'll kind of look at all of those. But just briefly, we'll look at the pros and cons of land mobile radio. The infrastructure is already here, it just needs to be enhanced, okay? It's what ALMR and AWARN uses, so the AWARN is the anchorage system. And we're gonna talk a little bit about that coming up. The DOT, law enforcement, DOF, DOD is already using that, so we solve some of our interoperability problems. And it is what FirstNet recommends we continue to use at this time. The cons will vary with each of the LMR solutions. There's multiple solutions within this. Okay, over on page 14 at the top there, one of the quotes, again, coming from the LMR Insider magazine, is public safety agencies must continue to seek funding for LMR systems, equipment, and enhancements. Decision makers must consider the need for public safety agencies and the impact of the funding decisions in the on the ability of public safety responders to effectively communicate during day-to-day incidents and emergencies. So this is what we're looking at. We're trying to look at the operational need here, and that's the recommendations for those things. So I want to, as we were talking about cost and fees here, so as we look at in the middle of page 14, we look at the cost and fees. I do want to point out that our current radio system, we are spending approximately $470,000 for operation, maintenance, and personnel costs to support our system. And as we go through and start looking at more of this, we'll see more about how that plays in for us here. The I want to look up at the screen here at these maps, and what you'll see there is on the left-hand side, we've got our current ALMR coverage in the area. If we were to consider a AWARN type of a system, the same thing that Anchorage is using, that's in the middle screen, and on the far right is what we currently have. Could you maybe zoom in one more time, okay? So these are the approximate coverages that we could get with various LMR types of a system. And so currently, ALMR gives us the left-hand side, an AWARN, if we were to build it out in the way that we're considering, would be in the middle there, and then what we currently have on the right. So we'll kind of keep those images in mind. We'll come back to them. Okay. Next is ALMR. On the bottom of page 14, top of page 15. So we definitely have some pros. It is our ALMR is our current backup system. We already have 700 radios ALMR ready in our inventory. So 70% of our total inventory of radios is already ALMR capable. ALMR statewide. 22 state, 17 federal, non-DOD, and 6 DOD agencies are already using it. Interoperability is great. With ALMR, responders do not need to switch channels as they go from zone to zone. So as you see on the screen there, the ALMR coverage, anywhere in the core area, anywhere on the road system, you can be on a single talk group. You don't have to switch channels. Okay? However, there are some cons. We do continue to have congestion problems. There are three channels within ALMR in our area. We would need two of them just for our own. And in some of our recent experience, Alaska Shield, the Sockeye Flyer, with multiple agencies using these frequencies, we did have congestion problems. ALMR, as it's currently used, is a VHF, or very high frequency range of radios. These still have the building penetration problems, and we're going to see some more research later on how that works out. But they don't penetrate these buildings well. ALMR as a system has budget concerns. Long-term sustainability is in question.
I'm sorry, Mr. White, I need to interrupt. I need to dismiss myself for a little bit. So I'm going to hand it over to Assemblymember Sykes.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. So there are some long-term sustainability questions about ALMR with declining state budgets. They've never charged subscriber fees in the past, and there has been talk of that, and we have no idea what that's going to be. So our ongoing costs would be very difficult to calculate. Some of the maintenance concerns zone controllers for these ALMR zones still belong to the state, and there have been examples in the past where we as the borough have been bumped off of ALMR for higher priority users such as Alaska State Troopers. Now, we've heard stories of that, and we have been told since then that ALMR is not supposed to do that, but there has been some examples of that. So one of the problems that we have with ALMR currently is autonomy and the ability to conduct our businesses without being bumped off or without having to share with some of the other agencies. If we were to go strictly with an ALMR system, we would have no valid alternative, because right now ALMR is our backup system. And so to maintain our ISO credit, we would have to have a backup system, in which case we would have to maintain our current system, and we would also maintain our current system for that paging capability that we talked about earlier. The paging capability doesn't currently exist with ALMR, and so we would have to continue to maintain our old system. Next slide, please. So the Anchorage Wide Area Network is, again, an LMR-type system. With ALMR, there's three zones in the state. The fourth zone in the state is Anchorage, and Anchorage has essentially built up their own land mobile radio, and they've called themselves Zone 4. This is just a little bit different than the rest of the ALMR. It uses a 700 megahertz frequency range, or UHF, ultra-high frequency. It is interoperable with ALMR because both systems are IP-based, and you can bridge between the two sets of radio frequencies. As we see down there to the pros, Anchorage already has system administration. They already have a controller. And if were we to partner with Anchorage and become part of Zone 4, this would also tie into one of our ideas of smart communities and lower total cost of ownership by combining our efforts with other municipalities in the state. Okay. On the next page here, you can see that we would solve one of our autonomy issues. So even though we're on board with Anchorage, we would still have autonomy within our area and good interoperability with our neighbor Anchorage. It also gives us great growth opportunities. This type of technology is continuing to be expanded, and it's easy to buy new technology and add to what we have there. We can add additional towers. We can expand the footprint that you see on the screen there. So initially, we could have a smaller footprint and expand to whatever size we want. And one of the more important pros here is security. So this type of a system gives us the kind of security that we've been talking about. We wouldn't necessarily have people just buying a radio, coming in and interrupting our communications. Some of the cons are costs. Definitely one of the things we're concerned about. On our current towers, we have one radio at each site. We would have to expand that to five or six. Not only do we have the capital expenditure to buy those radios in the first place, but then we have continued maintenance costs. We have five or six times as much maintenance to do at those sites, potentially. Even though the equipment is getting better, you still have to go up there and power them and maintain them. The other con on this is a requirement for annual commitment to supporting a complex technology, and that means manpower. So if we were to enter into this kind of a system, we need manpower that knows how to maintain these things. And so as you see, there are additional maintenance costs. We would say on top of what we're currently paying to maintain our current system, we're looking at about $175,000 a year just for O&M. That means going to the sites and maintaining these systems, and two full-time technicians, radio technicians. So we're looking at about an additional $400,000 per year to maintain a system of this type over and above what we have right now. Okay, next. The next option that we looked at is, rather than partnering with Anchorage, if we were to go it on our own and we were to stand up an LMR type of a system just for us, and again, we would get the coverage that's on the map there, we could do so at a 700 megahertz range or a VHF range. We could do either one of those things. Some of the pros are we have complete autonomy. We can do what we need to and customize, and we always have availability of our systems. And we would be interoperable with both AWARN and LMR. To the cons, however, the costs are going to be much larger than if we were to partner with Anchorage. So we have more CapEx. We would need one additional FTE. That's three additional people. We need to buy equipment. We need to buy a controller. We need to have our own administration people. So both CapEx and OpEx become higher in those in that case. On the next page, there's some difficulties with the choice, whether it's VHF or 700. With VHF, the spectrum, we may not be able to get the frequency pairs necessary in this area in order to do that, so we wouldn't want to go to 700 megahertz. The next paragraph there talks about immediate costs. If we were to build out our own VHF type of a system, you can see that's just over $8 million. 700 megahertz system is over $10 million. So the costs there are quite high in order to do that. The additional maintenance, I mentioned that if we went with an AWARN, it was about $400,000. You can see here if we went on our own, the annual cost would be an additional $536,000. So it's more expensive. Okay, next slide. Single channel resolution. So what does LMR give us in terms of solutions that we were talking about? Some of the things that we talked about, the paging radio communications are all on the same channel. So we right now that interrupts our calls. And then as we talked about, we have this telephone game. So we would resolve those things by going to an LMR type of a system. At the bottom of the page there, as opposed to talking about frequencies, we talk about talk groups. So with whether it be a LMR or a other type of LMR type of a system, we have talk groups instead of frequencies. Each incident can have its own unique talk group, and so that the dispatch and all of the responders as part of that incident can all be on the same talk group, uninterrupted by any other incidents that are going on. Dispatch work. We mentioned earlier that the dispatch is very busy keeping track of all the, and this playing of the telephone game that we talked about earlier, that's alleviated red-headed dispatcher, as we looked at earlier. Next slide, please. With this kind of resolution, as we no longer have the zone-to-zone problem, we don't have to check group no matter where we are in the borough. if we were to choose a Zoom quarter on our own, we would still have some of the same dead spots that we talked about earlier. So again, the 700 megahertz gives us a much better solution there. Let's go to questions. As we talked earlier about that, the between systems is not currently possible. We would alleviate that problem. Right now, again, with the LMR type system, we would get much greater building pin problems, and we heard the audio. We would alleviate those problems as well. Look at the bottom of page 18. If we look at LMR, public intervention, that problem solved, they can't get on. Congestion, LMR, this could, or and MSB. We get more talk groups, and AWARN, many benefits there on the next page. And we looked at test results at Walmart, showed 0% coverage inside our lot. You're not talking to anybody on the inside using VHF with the 700 megahertz. Okay. As you read down, information about building penetration and more advantages to you, differences between 700 megahertz and VHF, and again, talking about the system, and you need, your responders need to talk to somebody who's out in the parking lot and vice versa, or DAS, and what that does is that takes signals from the outside and broadcasts folks to have those things. Most of them don't because it's a newer requirement with these devices. In addition, we've got a reason that we would want to go with a 700 megahertz instead of a VHF is we... Okay.
Yes, Mr. Mayfield.
I appreciate the exhaustive detail, but this whole thing had me at garbled communication. Our people, it jeopardizes lives, it jeopardizes the mission, and so forth. So I read ahead, and I saw backup of the ALNR. Mm-hmm. So can you just simply talk about cost and how we're going to come up with that?
I will. Okay. So we took all of these systems that we examined, and we scored them, and we looked. And as you see on the bottom of page 21 there, we went through and we scored the best option in terms of solving our problems. We also investigated the funding options and the total cost to maintain. And so ALMR is, AWARN is the next one there, scored at number 3. And fourth one was the MSB. When we combined the two scores and we looked at both cost and solving our, and thereby is the one that we're going to recommend. And so what that means is we would solve those benefits, lowers our cost somewhat because we're controller and the personnel necessary to maintain these things. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how we would propose implementing this. In the first year, we would build out the core area, and that would building penetration where we have large buildings like that. So we have many of those problems. We would also sign an agreement with ALMR to give us, be tied together with ALMR, so even though you have different frequencies on your handset, what happened is we would get that footprint that we looked at earlier of the AWARN, get our outlying areas in the rest of the borough, and there's the picture there on the screen. Turn to page 24, second and third years, we would simply continue to build coverage or whatever coverage we deemed was necessary. Again, looking at the maintenance costs on that in the middle of page 23, that would be an additional about $400,000. Next slide down for funding. So we looked at some potential throughout the dispatch portion of our operating budget. We're at about $700,000 a year. We would probably need to increase that. 911 budget, we talked 911 budget, says that we can only use it for call taking and call taking activities. We're trying to get the answer to your call. You're satisfied when somebody shows up at your door. And so we want to get things other than just call taking. And in many...
Assembly Member Doty.
And the total of that 911 funding would...
On all of our phones, we pay $2 a month on every single phone. And the total income, we're not spending all that. In fact, currently, we're putting $1 million a year aside into by this group to build a consolidated dispatch center. Okay? first changing the state language on how that money can be used, could potentially use for a radio system upgrade. So that's one of the things that we're proposing. After that, there is enough money left in there to be able to continue funding source. The city of Wasilla has a transportation safety grant, and in our conversation, help communications, radio communication upgrades. Addressed this body at one point and talked about bonding as a possible, used a specific sales tax for public safety, and then those are the funding options that we looked at. I also would like to point out building out a microwave IP-based system that we already have 700 radio handsets that are ALMR capable. So we've page 25 gives a little more information about those funding sources, that most grants will require P25 compliance and types of systems. If you look down at the SAFECOM there, you'll see that not only do they require some efforts to go to the FirstNet type of a system, so forward to the FirstNet type of a system. So that's what those grants are looking for, summary portion of this. Okay, so we talked about the need, it's clear, uninterrupted. We talked about the various options we looked at. Last question, or last slide there is the question and answer period. A commitment to moving forward, kind of a non, let us move forward and look at bonding issues, let us move forward and look at using the 911. Were to go forward with this, we would have to consider two FTEs, telecommunication, radio type area there, and continued robust funding for the...
Thank you very much. Appreciate the very, very thorough report. And Assistant Manager Hayes, do you have any other comments you'd like to make? Do you have a very brief time to get a snack? Okay, seeing so I would invite you to talk with Mr. Wyatt after we close the meeting. And three, thank you.
Okay.